You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour. Tonight, the first African-American grandmaster details his unorthodox education and the private chess match that defines him. And a socialite trying to escape an unhappy marriage accidentally crashes the coronation of the King of Nepal. Those stories and more tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. First, President Trump today released a partial outline of his 2018 budget. The budget blueprint, which the administration calls an America First budget, calls for a $54 billion boost in military spending offset by deep cuts to domestic programs and foreign aid. Here's Mick Mulvaney, director of the Office of Management and Budget, explaining the rationale for that budget.
I was elected to change our broken and dangerous system and thinking in government that has weakened and endangered our country and left our people defenseless. And I will not stop fighting for the safety of you and your families, believe me. Not today, not ever.
Of course, Donald Trump there during the presidential campaign, his speech reflecting the budget priorities here. And I think we have Mick Mulvaney's quote now on the budget in particular.
Real simple. You had an American First candidate. You have an American First president. Now you have an America First budget. We're spending more money to defend the country, more money to enforce the laws, more money to secure the borders, more money to take care of our vets, more money for school choice, and less money for things like foreign aid. That's exactly what the president said he was going to do. That's what the budget is.
As Mulvaney said, the Department's Defense, Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security would all see increases in their budgets, but the State Department and agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency, Health and Human Services, and the U.S. Agency for International Development would face significant cuts. With us now is Charlie Clark, senior correspondent for Government Executive Magazine and GovExec.com. Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Well, spell out the broad strokes of this budget for us, if you would.
Well, $54 billion in cuts to defense would actually be about a 10% rise since President Obama had already proposed about a $30 billion rise. And, of course, the Republicans never want to raise taxes in any way, so they want to offset that because of the Budget Control Act. They're required to come out even on defense versus domestic. They want to offset it with these pretty big cuts in the agencies, 31% for the Environmental Protection Agency, 28% for State Department and USAID. And there was 19 smaller agencies that would be completely eliminated under the budget, things like the National Endowment for the Arts and Humanities, Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
And in the interest of disclosure, that last one you mentioned would affect us here at Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's put this budget proposal in context. This is a skinny budget, not all the details there. This is really a first step. Talk about what would happen between this and actually having a budget in place.
Yes, well, this is what happens whenever there's a new administration. They don't really have time to prepare the full budget, which is thousands of pages. But basically, it does not deal with the main drivers of federal spending, which are things like Social Security and Medicare and interest on the debt. This is what the critics call the automatic pilot programs. So, and it doesn't deal with the intake of tax revenues. The deficit would be about $488 billion under this plan, which is what the Congressional Budget Office projected for next year. So they, in their mind, it comes out as a wash, although they Mulvaney acknowledged that it does not balance, which is what his branch of the Republican Party would like to see done in the next 10 years. So the full budget will come out in May, and that's where they have to go through a lot of programs more line by line and make the macro numbers add up. And then you have the appropriations bills that are considered during the summer and the fiscal year. Fiscal 18 would start on October 1st, but there's going to be so much tension and resistance on Capitol Hill, and not just on a partisan basis, but from a regional basis as well, that it's possible that a lot of this budget will be considered dead on arrival, and it's also possible that you could have some kind of government shutdown in September if there's really a failure to agree.
Talking about the new skinny budget proposal, the first broad strokes of discretionary spending priorities from the Trump administration. Charlie Clark is with us from Government Executive Magazine. Charlie, let's look at some of the specific points here. You mentioned the defense budget increase, not as big as it looks when you compare it to other projected increases, still substantial. How do you think this would play in Congress?
Well, Senator McCain, who's chairman of the Armed Services Committee, put out a statement with his House counterpart, Matt Thornberry from Texas, saying that the defense number is still too small. They would like it to go up about another $30 billion. And they think we need to send troops, more troops into Afghanistan. And the Trump people are already considering a live proposal to send another 1,000 troops into Syria. The Pentagon has some weapon systems that they're ready to adjust upward, but they've been fighting to control it, and they've been under the sequestration threat for the last 5 years, and that has hampered their flexibility. But there's plenty of people over in the Pentagon who are ready to spend the money, which is a point that Mulvaney made yesterday.
And you mentioned Senator McCain and others wanting more of an increase. There are some other people saying, and not just Democrats, some Republicans too, I think, saying, well, we could use a little more fiscal discipline from the Pentagon. We don't audit these things enough. We don't look at weapon systems we may not need anymore. Is that going to be an argument when this hits Congress?
Yes. In fact, ironically, that was Mick Mulvaney's argument, and one of the reasons that Senator McCain did not vote for Mulvaney to be Trump's budget director, because 5 years ago and 3 years ago in a different situation, Mulvaney was instrumental in the government shutdown because he did not want to raise the defense spending because he wanted to contribute more towards reducing the federal debt, which is up to about $19 trillion.
Let's talk about the other department that'll see the biggest increases under, or would see them under this proposal. The Department of Homeland Security looks like a 6% increase, and that, of course, includes about $2.5 billion to begin work on the border wall that President Trump has been talking about since he became candidate Trump. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Well, you know that Trump people put out a fiscal 17 supplemental request today, too, which the fiscal 17 budget has to be finalized next month. And it includes $1.5 billion for this wall. So they really want to get going on the wall, even though conceptually the idea that Mexico would pay for it has sort of been abandoned. And there's plenty of Republicans who are still very skeptical about it and how you define the wall. Some people are pointing out now that some of it is more like a fence or an electronic surveillance, and it would be applied differently in different areas. There's a lot of eminent domain issues, the ranchers and other home property owners. They may have to, Trump has asked for some new money for attorneys who might try and use eminent domain to claim the land for the wall. So there's still a lot to be worked out there. The Homeland Security Department doesn't come out totally the way it might like. I mean, there are some cuts, I think, in Coast Guard and some reshuffling of some of its spending towards more of the border security and the law enforcement theme.
And then looking at some of the proposed cuts, the Environmental Protection Agency people pointing to a 31% proposed cut to the EPA. What were the arguments for doing that from the Trump administration?
Well, a lot of this is the Republicans do not believe that climate change is a serious issue. And they also think that too many of the Obama administration EPAs and previous EPAs crackdown on air pollution and water pollution were too burdensome on industry, and they challenged a lot of it in court. Of course, Scott Pruitt, who's the new EPA administrator, was a attorney general in Oklahoma, and him personally challenged a lot of these in court. The EPA was the one agency mentioned in this budget with an exact figure for job cuts. 3,200 federal employees would lose. I noticed that the Wisconsin Lakes Initiative, it was mentioned in your broadcast earlier. Well, there's also in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., there's the Chesapeake Bay, Save the Bay initiative that would also be eliminated. So it's there's a lot of debate still to be done between scientists and environmental activists and litigators in court before any of these cuts go all the way through, which I don't think it's strictly going to be on a partisan basis. I think there's some regional differences there, too.
I was going to ask about that. You mentioned the regional pushback, and when you're talking about, say, EPA programs that focus on the Great Lakes region or the Chesapeake Bay region, is that something where you might see bipartisan pushback on that?
Yes. There's already a Virginia congressman, Rob Whitman, who has said that even though he's a loyal Republican, that he can't sit idle while the Chesapeake Bay, Save the Bay initiative is abolished. And the same applies in public broadcasting, because there's a lot, I mean, this is a perennial for Republicans going back to the Newt Gingrich Congress in the 90s and also back in the 80s under Reagan, where the idea of abolishing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowments for the Arts and Humanities doesn't strictly play on partisan lines, because in broadcasting, for example, the state of Maine, the state of Alaska, you have a lot of rural people who may be conservative Republican voters but who depend on public broadcasting. So the idea that it's all for a bunch of liberals, I think, is a little bit exaggerated. And some people may argue the same thing with the two endowments. You know, they sort of support a lot of highbrow urban art and scholarly pursuits in the humanities, you know, the papers of the First Continental Congress or something. And it's not something that maybe average people are paying much attention to, but they also make the argument that at $148 million a year, those two endowments are pittance in compared with the larger budget. But the basic clash is that the Republicans begin with the assumption that no taxes can be raised. So that's the Democrats will fight to preserve the 2011 Budget Control Act balance between domestic and defense spending, and their argument would be that, yeah, if you want new spending on defense, then you have to raise taxes for it and you have to raise domestic spending equally. But of course, the Democrats are in the minority now, and this is in a new era where we have Republicans controlling the White House as well as both chambers of Congress.
We're talking to Charlie Clark, senior correspondent at Government Executive Magazine, about the Trump administration's budget blueprint unveiled today. Want to hear your thoughts at 800-642-1234. What do you make of what you've seen in this budget proposal? Do you agree that the country should boost its defense and homeland security spending, or cut funding to agencies that oversee things like environment, health, agriculture, and labor, among others? Or would you like to see different priorities? How about taxes? Would you like them to see them stay where they are, get cut, go up to pay for some of these priorities? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our analysis of the Trump administration's budget blueprint, which calls for a big increase in defense spending and significant decreases to the State Department and the Environmental Protection Agency, also eliminating 19 government agencies. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Which parts of this budget outline are you agreeing with? Which parts are you worried about? What do you think about the proposal to eliminate 19 government agencies, thousands of federal jobs, and who do you see as the winners and losers in this budget outline? Call in at 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Charlie Clark stays with us. He's senior correspondent for Government Executive Magazine and GovExec.com. Before we go to our callers, Charlie, let's talk about that so-called entitlement issue, the Social Security, the Medicare. This is a tough thing to tackle. People have been talking about trying to make changes there. It's pretty hard to do, though, isn't it?
Yes. Well, both the Medicare and the Social Security trust funds are in danger of becoming insolvent, but it's decades away, and the Affordable Care Act, which the Republicans are trying to repeal now, prolong the life of the Medicare fund for a while. But the other complication is that Trump is on the record in many video clips promising that Social Security and Medicare will not be touched because people have earned it. It's a little different from a handout program, because a lot of people have paid their own. I mean, most adult working Americans have paid their own money into it. So Paul Ryan from your home state does not quite see it that way. And his early budgets in 2011 and 13 had plenty of efforts to try and reform Social Security and Medicare, and they say to preserve it for the long run. But a lot of the critics say it really means cutting people's monthly benefits to some extent.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Cindy on the line in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. I'm just disgusted with this whole budget. I mean, Trump said he was going, when he was candidate, he said if he won, he was going to put America first and be a president for all Americans. Yet he's talking about cutting all these domestic programs. And, I mean, if he adds to the war budget or the defense budget, most of that goes over to other countries anyway. It doesn't stay here. So I just don't understand how he can talk these talks and then do completely the opposite once he's in office.
Cindy, thanks for the call. I mean, that's, I guess, your interpretation of America First. But Charlie, President Trump, he's doing things he had talked about during the campaign, isn't he?
Yes. To the extent that the average voter really knows about the budget and has an opinion on some of these lesser-known agencies, of course, is questionable. But foreign aid has never been popular among the American voters because it does feel like it's going to somebody else that they'll never meet. But the people who run the Pentagon and the State Department agree that foreign aid is an important tool. It helps avoid wars. It helps develop countries that become our trading partners and prevent hotspots from flaring up around the world. That's the theory of it anyway. So it's less than 1% of the budget, and I think there's been polls showing that the average American thinks that it's a much higher percentage of the budget than it really is.
Thanks for the call. Cindy, we'll go next to Lee in Madison. Lee, hi.
Hi. Why don't we start looking at corporate entitlements, cut those first, and then we could start looking at maybe some of the domestic or the entitlements or some other things in the budget. But our corporate entitlements are just, I mean, what's General Electric have a negative 300% tax rate or doling out money to Shell? Do they get up $1.5 billion a year in corporate incentives and entitlements?
Lee, thanks for the call. Charlie, is there that much money out there in money that is either given in some subsidy form to corporations or tax cuts or loopholes, if people want to call them that, that we could
well,
more than a drop in the bucket?
People on the left do criticize what they call corporate welfare, and people on the right, too. I mean, a good example of that is the Export-Import Bank of the United States, which helps foreign governments buy American-made aircraft from Boeing, for example. So Boeing and Lockheed are very much backers of the Export-Import Bank, but it gets attacked from the right and the left as being a corporate subsidy. I will mention that among these 19 agencies that the Trump people would like to abolish is the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, which is an independent banking agency of sorts that also lends money to developing countries to help boost their trade prospects. And some people might argue that that's corporate welfare, too, but there's a counter argument.
Thanks a lot for that call. Want to get into some programs aimed at helping lower-income Americans. The LIHEAP, the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, helps people pay utility bills and weatherize homes. Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, as the local officials like to call it, part of Housing and Urban Development. It helps support affordable housing. They're on the chopping block, it looks like.
Yeah, a lot of the states and governors, we have a lot of Republican governors, of course, and they say they want flexibility, but they also want the federal money. And it's the community development block grants do go toward the sort of less visible programs for the low-income people, and who don't have their own lobby that's very powerful in Washington. So again, this is sort of a natural target, and there's other programs within HUD too that Ben Carson, the new secretary there, has helped nominate, which the tenants groups and affordable housing people and the people who work with the homeless are not happy with some of those proposals.
Let's bring on another caller. We've got Becky on the line in Beloit. Becky, hi.
Hi, that was a great segue for my question. I work at the public library here in Beloit, and we help a lot of those lower-income people that you were just talking about. And my question is, will public libraries be affected by this? I can't possibly understand the intricacies of this, but we're already on a really tight budget, and, you know, we're really trying to help people in our community. I just wonder what effects this will have on public libraries.
Well, one of the 19 agencies that would be abolished is the Institute of Museum and Library Services. Now, they don't fund the base budgets of local libraries, but they do give a lot of important grants. And, you know, there's all sorts of building construction and money that if there was an infrastructure program, which the Trump people claim is their third priority, priority. The first priority is health care reform. The second is tax reform. And the third is going to be infrastructure, they say. Maybe there would be some infrastructure projects that would help the library community. But the thing is that depending on the state you live in, local funding may be rising or falling for libraries, independent of what happens in Washington. I think the Trump people believe that the mood in the country is for less government, with the exception being defense and defense against terrorism. And that is debatable. We'll see how the polls react to some of these proposals and how the average voters, especially the ones in rural areas who voted for Trump, react to some of these proposals to kill programs over the next couple of weeks.
We'll leave it there for now. Charlie, thanks a lot for spending this time with us today.
Happy to do it. Yeah.
We've been talking to Charlie Clark, senior correspondent for Government Executive Magazine and GovExec.com, looking at this first step in a big, long budget process, the so-called skinny budget released by the Trump administration. Still time to share your thoughts, concerns, and hopes for the budget over at the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.